The following podcast was recorded from a live event as a part of the Educational Theater Association's professional development programming. The views and opinions expressed are those of our guest speakers and are not intended to reflect endorsement of an organization, vendor, or product by EDTA.
So hello, everyone, and welcome. You'll notice that your mics are on mute this evening for the webinar. We know that you're going to have questions, so feel free to ask them anytime during the webinar. Please use the question and answer function, and that should be at the bottom of your screen. There are some controls, and if you just wave your mouse there, you'll see the question and answer function. I'll make certain that any question you have, our guest speakers address it. And if we don't get to your question this evening, if we run out of time, we're going to be sure and post those questions and send them to all of you who signed up for our webinar. This is the first of EDTA's 2019 Professional Development Webinars. There will be more. In this case, this webinar is a panel discussion. And over the next few months and weeks, we'll be holding several conversations like this to respond to the questions that you've been posting in community. These webinars will be an opportunity for you to hear it straight from those people who've been answering our questions and really get a chance to talk. So let's talk. So a little bit about us. My name is Corey Wilkerson. I'm the Educational Theater Association's Education Manager, and you can see my contact information there on the screen. Love to hear from you, so please feel free to email me anytime if you have a question or a comment. This evening, we have with us George Lido, and George is a set designer in the San Francisco Bay Area. He has a degree in theater with a concentration in set and lighting design from Cal State University, Northridge, and he also studied set design at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. Afterwards, he served as a designer and project manager in the architectural field for 15 years before coming back to the entertainment industry. And since then, he's designed or managed projects for Universal Studios, Six Flags, WXXA TV, and other clients, as well as many theatrical companies in the Bay Area. And you can read his blog at that address there on the screen, www.setdesignandtech.wordpress.com. And you can see some of his work at www.georgeflido.net. George, do you want to say hello this evening?
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
Also on the line tonight with us this evening is Beth Rand. Beth is an educational lighting designer and high school theater operations coach, and she's based in the Boulder, Denver area. And Beth has a bachelor's degree in lighting design, a master's degree in the entertainment business, and she's a certified CTE theater teacher. Beth also teaches online courses, and she's the author of several books on high school theater technical theater, and she's been working in educational technical theater since she was in high school herself, and she has over 30 years experience in the industry. She started when she was 9 years old.
Thank you.
She also has been a high school theater manager for 7 years. She's designed the lighting for hundreds of high school productions, university plays, musicals, dance recitals. And for Beth, for more information, you can visit her at her website at www.preset.org, and notice that is with two T's. So in our initial planning meetings for this webinar, we thought a lot about what most educators would like to know. And we realized that it would help to begin here with the big question, what is technical theater anyway? What does it mean to us as theater educators? And Beth, you had some really good thoughts about technical theater and the idea that technical theater is really about theater operations. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Certainly. High school theater is sometimes different than other theaters in that sometimes it's run like a roadhouse. And so you've got a lot of events in your high school theater, such as concerts, choir concerts, band concerts, talent shows, staff meetings, class meetings, all sorts of dance companies come in and rent your theater too, usually. Cultural events, all sorts of things. The middle school wants to use the high school theater. So technical theater really is everything other than acting. And then in the course in the educational setting, it involves all of the other operations. Ideally, it's really nice if your theater is staffed, but that is not always the case. We're always advocating for that to be the case, but oftentimes you, the drama teacher, you're the only person doing everything. You're teaching your own classes, you're doing tech for your own shows, and then you're managing all these events that come into the theater. So really, theater operations just encompasses everything, and you have to be prepared to be running all these operations in your theater.
Mm-hmm. And George, I know the other idea that kind of came out of our conversations was that oftentimes there's a difference between tech theater and designing. So especially as we think about this topic as educators, can you talk a little bit about that and share some of your thoughts?
Sure. We think of tech theater as, like as Beth said, we think of tech theater as covering everything. But design requires a little bit of a different mindset. Design is about solving problems. Even though a lot of people think that design is about making pretty things, well, it's not. It's really about solving problems and starting with identifying the problem. So whether you're designing a set, lighting, costumes, props, sound, you really have to take a look at what the needs are in the story, and then come up with a solution that makes that come alive to the audience. The construction side is about making it the designer's intention happen. So you've got the design on one side, creating a solution, and then you have the technical side, if I may use that word, physically building. And it's like an architect. You're designing a building, mm-hmm. having a contractor build it. It all goes to the same end product, but it's two different specialties, two different ways of thinking about the process.
And kind of bringing that solution to life too, as you, if you're the technician at the lighting board or if you're the technician at the sound board, kind of rolls right into Beth's idea about operations. Thank you. So here's a big question that our members are often asking. That answer may vary depending on your circumstances. When you're building or remodeling the theater, what are some things that should be taken into consideration? So let's start with I'm building a brand new theater from scratch. George, any advice for me?
Sure. At some point, you're going to be sitting down with an architect. That's just the way it goes. And one of the first things the architect's going to do is interview you to see what your needs are in the theater. How many people in the audience? How many auditoriums are inside? Are you going to be producing your own shows? Is it going to be a roadhouse? And so forth and so on. So really, one of the first things you want to do is sit down and make a list of what you think you're going to need. And you don't have to specify how big the rooms are, but you can say, I would like a 500-seat auditorium. I would like a black box to seat about 100. I definitely need a scene shop, or a costume shop, or this, that, or whatever. I need so many dressing rooms, I'm going to need some storage space. You make a list. And then what I like to do with lists like that is leave them alone for a couple of days and then come back and look at them again and see if you missed something or if you really don't need something. It's a way of looking at it with a fresh eye. You also want to talk to other people in your organization, see what needs they may have for the theater. And if you can at all, go visit a few local theaters and see what works for them and what doesn't. We can learn just as much about what doesn't work as we can about what does work. So later, when you sit down with your theater consultant or your architect or both, you're going to be prepared for that conversation. You're going to have a good understanding of what the space has to make happen for you.
And you use the term roadhouse, George. So by that, do you mean your facility being used by many others? Is that what you meant by that term?
Yeah, typically a roadhouse is a theater that doesn't have its own producing organization attached to it. So it's rented by outside companies, touring shows and so forth, and it's just one after the other. A lot, like Beth said, a lot of high school theaters seem to host shows put on by outside organizations.
I was so just going to Yeah, I was just going to flip that over to Beth, because you brought that point up too, Beth, where you said lots of times your theater is being used for all kinds of things. Can you kind of elaborate on that and how that might impact what you're doing when you're designing a theater?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, when I say that a theater is like a roadhouse, or educational theater is like a roadhouse, essentially each event that comes in doesn't really belong to the theater per se. So even the the play and the musical each year, that's only two events that come into the theater. And although it's a really gray area, because a lot of times the drama department is using the theater as their own space, but even then the concerts that come in, the school productions that come in, they're essentially coming in from the outside, quote unquote. So that's sort of why it's being run like a roadhouse. And really, you do want to, when you're building a new theater, you want to take into consideration every aspect of everybody who's coming in. For instance, concerts, they need to have a lot of downlighting so that they can see their music. That kind of thing needs to be put in the plans. And oftentimes architects will hire theater consultants. Have a look, if you do know that, then have a look at the theater consultant's website. It's really important that the theater consultant has specialized knowledge about educational theaters. A lot of them say that they are theater consultants, but they look at concert halls and houses of worship and home theaters. But really, you want to look for the theater consultant that has a lot of educational theater experience, because of the wide range of people that come in.
And what about if I'm remodeling my existing program? I got a little extra money. The principal called me in and said, hey, your program's doing so well. We'd like to build on that. Beth, do you have any advice for that? What should I think about in terms of lights and sound? You know, what should I think about in a remodel?
Yeah, well, George alluded to the fact of something that I call designing backwards. And he said, find out what your needs are before you start designing the theater. You really need to determine what all the functions will be in your theater, and then how much the staffing that you will have once the theater opens. Is it you, the drama teacher, you're going to be the whole staff, or are you going to have theater manager and technicians and visiting artists? All that will determine what you want to be designing and what type of equipment that you want to have. Like, for instance, do you want a state-of-the-art light board or a digital sound board if there's going to be no one to teach the students how to use it every year? So again, like George says, designing backwards, think about how your programs are going to be happening before you make all your choices. Oftentimes you find that your students are peer mentoring, which is great. But I hear from a lot of drama teachers that I have this elaborate light board or soundboard and I don't know how to run it, but my students do. So that could have been alleviated in the beginning when they'd first thought about the remodel or the build as to who is going to be staffing it. So everything that you need to do is think about all the functions in your theater and then work backwards from there.
And I think we were talking too about buying what you need, but not buying, maybe you don't need all the bells and whistles, really thinking about buying what you need and not just because this may be the latest thing. Yeah, really good point.
Just one thing I'd like to add to that in terms of what to think about when you're putting a theater together. Beth mentioned concerts. If you're going to have a lot of concerts, you need to know that touring concerts bring a lot of roadblocks with them. And they have to go somewhere once whatever's inside comes out. A lot of times you walk by a theater and you see stacks of roadblocks in the back alley because there's no place to put them inside. Well, that works sometimes if the weather cooperates, but if it's raining or snowing, you may not want to do that. So you may want to allow some space, like in the wings or backstage, to take care of some of what these companies bring with them that does not end up on stage.
And a lot of school theaters have concerts coming from their own music department too. So even thinking about when you have sets, how do you share a space with sets and musical instruments that maybe live on the stage most of the time? Yeah, really good point.
And that $40,000 Steinway grand piano has to go somewhere too.
Yeah, it has to have a home. Good points. So here was another one that emerged as we began to talk and plan this webinar. How do we address the need to give students interested in the production side of theater a really solid grounding and a rigorous education? And I'm going to pause for a moment and welcome Jim Palmerini. Jim is the Director of Education Policy and Advocacy at EDTA. Thanks for joining us, Jim. Welcome. We were just talking, and Jim, if you would mute your mic, please, that would be great. Perfect. Jim, we were just talking with Beth and George, and we were talking about how do we make sure tech students get a grounding in the production side of theater. And I think, Beth and George, you both had some really good points about this. So what do I do to make sure my students really feel comfortable out there in the real world? Who wants to go first?
I want to talk about distinguishing tech from acting, because tech is not a performance art per se. It's a STEM subject. I call it STEM behind the scenes. And so you really need to be supporting those students. There may be some students that you have that are vocational students who will go on into the entertainment industry in some way and are going to get their solid grounding from what they did in their high school. I thoroughly agree all acting students should have some experience in tech so that they know what's going on. It's a bit harder the other way around sometimes to get tech students to want to have some experience in acting. And I think,
yeah, that's interesting.
It sounds unfair, but I think we have to sort of validate that because a lot of them do not want to act. So I think it's important to support them with visiting artists. If you are a one person show and you don't have a theater manager or theater technicians to mentor your students, visiting artists, I call them specialty coaches, like a sports team. I think that the theater needs to have a lighting coach and a set coach and a sound coach and a costume coach. And I think that it's very important to run your theater as professionally as possible and use all the protocol, because really there's no difference on the theatrical process from what we're doing in high school theater as to what we do in the real world. So there's an issue that we're working with minors, but other than that, it's the same theatrical process they're going to experience out there.
Yeah, I love that point about really teaching them professionalism, and that really will help ground them. And I think our members here at EDTA do such a fabulous job of that. George, I think you had some good things to say about that, especially if I'm a one-man show. I'm the only theater teacher in the building, and I'm expected to handle all aspects of production. And you had some really good tips for someone in that position.
That's really a tough position to be in, because you have to be basically an expert at everything you're teaching. The students really deserve the best training they can get. That's what they're in school for. So it's really a lot of pressure on the teacher, on you in this case, to be totally grounded in everything, not just the acting and directing, but also designing sets, which is a specialty in itself. Designing lights is a specialty in itself. Designing costumes is a specialty in itself. And it's not just a matter of being specialties. All these things are evolving daily. The technology is just going everywhere. So if you're trying to do everything yourself because you have to, then you really want to get as much help as you can from professional, from outside professional practitioners. Lots of textbooks used in college and grad school, which are very good in all the subjects. There are publications, magazines, trade journals that you can learn from. A lot of them are free. There's a lot of information out there. What you want to do is just be as up to date on all of them as you can. And at the same time, try to talk to your administration into getting a little specialized help there, like Beth said, with coaches.
With some coaches, maybe some teaching artist residencies. And I believe you brought up the idea of going to local theaters and see if you can partner with a local theater to help you out too.
If you can find a local professional theater or regional theater that's staffed by professionals, or if you can find a good university professional training program in a university, that's fantastic. They would probably love to help you, even if it's just taking your students to their facility so you can see what they have. But a lot of times, some of those advanced students would love to come over and help you with what their specialties are. Yeah. There's a lot of help out, so it's looking for it.
An additional thing to do, too, is because those specialists or those coaches can't be with you all the time, is to utilize peer teaching, which a lot of people do. You know, your upperclassmen, your juniors and your seniors can be teaching the new freshmen and sophomore who are coming in. I've found it's a really good model and really works to have like a head lighting person, a headset person, who is also learning by teaching other students too. Of course, that doesn't mean they don't need to be supervised, but peer teaching in theater really, really seems to work very well.
Great ideas. Here's another big one. I have a great program, but I don't have state-of-the-art equipment. So how can I teach tech theater? Maybe I don't have any equipment at all. So what do I do? George, any ideas?
Sure, do it the old-fashioned way. Books, textbooks. Most of tech theater is actually not about the state-of-the-art equipment. It's about principles and concepts and methods of doing things. You can teach how to build a flat, literally, with a textbook and a blackboard. You don't need the latest saw stop power saw.
Sure.
You can teach a lot of this stuff. You can teach rigging with a textbook and with a slideshow, and with an instructor that really knows the material. Nowadays, you can do it with videos. But the problem with thinking that you have to have state-of-the-art equipment is the equipment is just a tool. It just helps you do what you need to do anyway. If you don't know how to use the equipment, then you can't do what the equipment is designed to do. So whether it's state-of-the-art or not, really doesn't make all that much difference. Beth, can you add something to that in lighting?
Yeah, certainly I can speak to lighting. Yes, I mean, we need the students to know why they're doing what they're doing. So if you don't have a, you know, the digital natives that we teach these days, they all gravitate towards the computer boards and the flashy LEDs, but they have no grounding in design. For instance, you don't need a chase sequence in the opening scene of Little Women, but that would be really fun. But you need to look at why you're doing what you're doing and think about the design in the first place, which doesn't depend on the equipment. Really, lighting design in particular hasn't changed in decades, and you don't need a flashy computer board to teach lighting design. One thing to teach your students would be how to analyze a script, read through the script. Where does the character turn on the table lamp? Is there a sunset happening? Do the characters walk through a forest? What would the lighting look like for each of these things? What would be the motivation for the lighting? And then also you can use household objects for teaching things like color theory. You can use flashlights and cellophane. I mean, gels aren't too expensive, but if you can't get gels, you know, flashlights and cellophane work really great. So there's a lot of other options that you can do. And also one thing that I've done before is create a techie exchange program where I took my tech crew to another high school, and they got to meet that high school's tech crew and see how they do things. And then that high school came to visit us. So there's a lot of things you can do out there that don't involve flashy light boards and soundboards.
What a great idea. And I will tell our audience that another webinar coming up this summer will be a webinar between a teacher and a teaching artist who did exactly that. The teacher was in a high poverty school district. She had very few lights, and she was paired with a lighting designer from the area. And together, working with a follow spot that had some colored gels and a couple of stage lights, they taught the kids lighting design. And we're going to have that student work to feature for you in an upcoming webinar.
Can I add something to that?
Oh, of course, George. Go right ahead.
Back when I was in college, we took lighting design. We had to. And we did not touch any equipment in that class. We did light plots. We studied the script. We did a light plot. We laid out the areas. We laid out the specials. And then as the class progressed, we learned how to write in the circuiting and the cues and everything. So the entire design was done on paper. Now, granted, the class told us about the various instruments, the ranges and the throws and the all that stuff. It was a million years ago. I don't remember what it was. But anyway, that entire light design class, and it was a whole semester, was done on paper without ever setting foot on stage or even just looking at a, even looking at a, at a lighting instrument except for class demonstration. When we were learning set design, we were not building anything. We were doing it all on paper. And like Beth said, you start by taking a good look at the story, the script, and see what it is you're trying to get through to the audience.
Here in my area, we have a venue that Broadway touring groups come through all the time. And I had a chance to speak with one of the sound operators and designers there. And this designer said that he lays everything out on paper first with quarters, dimes, and nickels to represent the different intensities. And he plays his cues with his quarters, dimes, and nickels. He practices in his hotel room. And that's running a cast of 16 with body mics and all of the mics on stage and any special sound effects. Yeah, so really great point that it isn't about the equipment, it's about the processes, the thought processes and the art making itself. Well, here's another big one. What about some best practice safety tips for working with students and tech? We're giving kids access to power tools and high voltage lighting and rigging and lots of dangerous things. So what do you consider vital for student safety? And Beth, I'm going to throw it over to you to start.
Okay. It's important to know that actually, here's the bad news, Department of Labor and Industries prohibits minors from doing all the kinds of things that we do in technical theater. But, and there's a but, which is that it's okay if they're in a bona fide vocational program. And that's not defined though. I've never seen that actually defined what is a bona fide vocational program. So it's very important for you to, even if you're a one person, and I wanted to say also check your own state's Department of Labor and Industries website because it also varies from state to state. So it's really important for you to create your own safety program. And if you do nothing else, I think there's three things that you should do. One is to train your students every year and keep records of who is trained. For instance, if you have a fly system, what I would do when I have a fly system is I train the students and then I put a list of the trained students with my initials next to it, next to the fly system, so that anybody can come in there and when the student says, I know how to use it, they can look up their name and make sure that yes, they are actually signed off. So training students every year and retraining them every year too, even though they say that I know it, they should be retrained every year and keep documentation of all of the records of who is trained. The second thing is signage is really, really important. For instance, don't enter the catwalks. We know that people don't read signs, but you'll find that your students will take particular ownership to enforce all of your posted rules. And then the third thing is a liability waiver signed by the parents, which actually lists all the hazard activities that they're going to be involved in, because you want the parents to know what they're doing. And really, it's called risk management. It's not called risk avoidance, and the theater is a hazardous place, so we have to accept that. And of course, students, all these precautions aren't going to stop a parent from getting upset or suing or somebody getting hurt, but it is going to show that you did everything you possibly did in order to make sure that that student is safe. Sure. And if you are the only person, then you need to take extra precautions and keep extra documentation.
And there's lots of parallels in sports and athletics, which are also high-risk activities for students.
Right.
And George, do you want to talk about maintaining equipment and kind of safety issues about equipment maintenance? I think, was it you that brought up the idea of the annual maintenance need?
Sure. Anytime you buy a tool, a power saw, electric saw, machines, and they go down just like cars do and just like toasters do and just like blenders do, they need a little TLC every now and then. Most power tools, most equipment used in the shop comes with an instruction book. And more those instruction books nowadays are telling you, are also giving you information on how to maintain the piece, how to change the blades, where to oil it, how often to oil it, and so forth. If not, there is something called the Power Tool Institute online, which is just that. It's an organization of power tool manufacturers, and they have a lot of information online on how to use some of this equipment and how to maintain it and how to use it safely. So there's lots of information out there. But what Beth was saying about training, that is the most important part. When you're being trained, say on a saw, you should not only be getting trained on how to use it properly for what it's intended to do, but also how to do it safely. They need to go hand in hand. You're being trained on how to use a fly system. You need to be shown how the system works, but also how to use it safely. Again, it goes hand in hand. But yeah, as far as maintenance, a lot of shops, a lot of shop I worked in for a while, basically cleaned all the equipment after every show. There's a little bit of a gap between starting one show, finishing one show, and starting the next one. So that was used to clean up the shop, maintain the equipment, oil whatever needed to be oiled, making sure the blades were sharp, and it all went on a binder. There was an actual record of who did what to which machine on when. Mm-hmm. And if there was a problem with any of them, then whoever maintained it was supposed to tell the technical director so he could address it. So yeah, if it becomes a system, if it becomes a habit to do this, then it's not something that you realize 3 years later that your saw needs a new blade. It's something that you're already taking care of because it's an ongoing maintenance.
Yeah, good point. Kind of weave this into your curriculum. Make it systemic, both in terms of training your students and in maintaining your equipment. And there's an issue of advocacy, too, to make sure that your principal or your administrators know that there are ongoing expenses and reaching out to others to help you advocate, to reaching out to parents to help you advocate. Well, we're actually at the point in our webinar, perfect timing, to shift into questions. And I have a couple of questions here from those of us on the line. The first one is referring to our talking about getting coaches, or if you're a department of one and you want to reach out and you want to improve your tech offerings that you can give to your kids, how do you pay for all those coaches? So I'm going to take a stab at some of this, and I will tell you from my perspective, I operated a middle school program for about 10 years. And in my middle school program, we did a couple of things. We did some of the things that George and Beth talked about this evening. But what we did is we started a drama club booster, and that drama club booster helped us in fundraising and helped us provide extra opportunities for the students. We reached out to a local school that was better funded than our program was, and they sent over help to help us with our students. They actually loaned us equipment as well. And the other thing that you can do is you can look to your local arts or your state arts council and try to write for a matching funds grant. Perhaps get your PTO or another parent booster club to come up with some funding and get some matching funding and bring in some teaching artists to help your students. So that's just from my perspective. George or Beth, do you have anything to add to that?
I have been hired as a lighting designer through a grant that the teacher obtained in order to hire me as the lighting coach, I suppose, for the students. So I think that's an awesome way to do that. Also, see if you can get some advocacy going with your administrators, because they always say that the money's not there, but I do believe the money is there. It's just how it's doled out. And I think letting them know about this idea of coaches, because I think administrators, through no fault of their own, they don't really know what goes on behind the scenes of a theater. When they come to see a show, they just see all the polished magic that we show them. So educating your administrators as to what's needed too can really help.
Right. And sometimes that's an advocacy point. People not realizing what it is you need and kind of making that point for career to work connections of tech students being as important as our kids who are going on as performers. A couple more questions here. I've been given money to staff my theater program. I'll be the director, but what other positions should I hire? So that kind of is a nice segue. So I've been given some money, and I do want to add some people to help kind of staff a tech program in our school. What would these coaches look like, or what positions should I hire or ask for? Mm-hmm. Beth, do you want to start on that one?
Sure. I think it's important first off to know the difference between a theater manager and a technical director. A technical director is someone who knows basically how all the technical things work. They have a wide background in a variety of all of the specialties that we do in tech theater. A theater manager is more a person who does all the paperwork. And so oftentimes a school will want to hire a theater manager slash tech director, not really realizing that the tech director doesn't like paperwork and the theater manager doesn't have all the specialty experiences, but they just have a generalized knowledge. So one thing to do if you're hiring one person is to decide, do you want a theater manager or a technical director? The technical director would work more closely with your drama department and your plays, building your sets, helping the students learn all the equipment. Whereas the theater manager would organize all of the events that come into your quote unquote roadhouse and take care of that end of things. So it'd be nice if you could have both. In terms of coaches, the lighting, sound, sets, costumes, look at your drama department and decide what you want, what you personally have experience in, and what you need some help in.
And in terms of structure, the coaches are temporary positions, much like an athletic coach. Is that correct?
Yeah, that would be the way. They're more your visiting artists, but I just find that administrators understand the word coaches better than visiting artists. They understand how coaches work and all the specialties that are needed in your team.
Beth, was it you who, I know that in our community forums, someone had posted a list of potential positions and kind of descriptions of those. Was that you that had posted that list?
That was me. And I think a good model, I mean, this is your ideal model, would be to have a theater manager and then also a technical director. And then I found what works really well in theaters that I've managed that have technicians is to have three sound people, two or three lighting people, and two rigging or stage people. These people don't work every event all the time, which is why you need a good pool of people. But usually sound people, more events seem to need sound than they do lighting or rigging or stage, you know, backstage work. So I usually try to hire more sound people than lighting or rigging. And then your lighting people can work the shows that come in, they can help with concerts, but then they can also be your designers for your shows as well.
And that's kind of a wish list for a rather large and well-funded program. But I know that your descriptions would work. People could kind of cut and paste or take out the description that worked for their program. Would you be able to make that available for our listeners after this evening?
Yes, certainly.
Okay, if you would send that to me, I'll send it to everyone who is on the line with us tonight. That would be great. In your opinion, George, which should I build, a traditional proscenium arch or black box theater? Given the choice, which should I build?
That, there's no clear answer to that. It totally depends on what your intentions are for your own program. Proscenium theaters are great. They're not very flexible in that the audience can only sit in one place. Generally, they require far more in expenses, backstage, rigging systems, lighting, so forth. Sets tend to be larger. And if you have, it depends on what kind of shows you're going to do. Also, a black box gives you all kinds of flexibility. You can put the audience on one side, two sides, three sides, four sides. You can do shows in the round. I have done back in grad school, I paid my dues doing summer stock. And one summer we had a theater that was inside a tent. It was the ultimate black box. It was a tent with audience on four sides and 18-foot square stage in the middle. And one of the shows we did there was California Suite, which is two separate rooms and a hotel. So you have two rooms in this totally surrounded by audience. So what do you do about the walls? Well, we solved it, but you can do a lot in a black box. and you can do a lot in a proscenium theater. It really depends on your intentions, how much space you have, what you want, what kind of shows you want to do, whether you want to run it as a roadhouse. A proscenium theater is certainly easier to run as a roadhouse than a black box. But they both have pros and cons. And again, it's sitting down to take a look at your program in the future and see what it is you really want to do with it.
Great, thank you. We just had another question pop up, kind of going back to the idea of coaches. When you're hiring these coaches, what is a reasonable salary? What should you expect to pay? And our listener says, I know it varies across the country, but what can you give us an approximate of what would be fair?
I would say, look on your school district's website, what do they pay your sports coaches? Because if you think about the length of time that a coach, like a lighting coach or a set coach, is going to be in tech rehearsals, running, building things, designing things, working with the students, compare them to a sports team that maybe is meeting once or twice a week for a longer period of time. So it all sort of, I think the overall time sort of comes out fairly even. So look at those, because most districts have a good strict pay scale for all of their coaches. So it, of course, each district's going to vary.
We actually got funding for a position for a stage manager in my middle school program I was talking about, because there was unused funding for, it was a flags coaching position. So you can really be creative. Sit down, share the need, and be creative, both in this coaching issue and getting more tech resources for your school, and in the use of your stage. And kind of circling back to George, what you were talking about with your proscenium arch versus black box. I've also seen school theaters who built a black box on their proscenium arch stage and brought the audience right up on stage. So really get creative. I'm sorry, George, go ahead.
Just a couple of years ago, I designed Macbeth for a high school on stage. We turned their stage into a black box. We had the audience on two sides and the action took place in a runway in the middle. And it's not because of the budget, it's just because that's what the director wanted to do to make the show a little more intimate than you could by having it in this huge auditorium. So yeah, you've got all kinds of flexibility.
Yeah, thinking outside the box. The next question we have is rigging. What do I need to know about rigging? So can you speak a little bit about rigging for us?
Yes, certainly. And of course, in lighting, we use rigging a lot if you have a fly system. Safety is the biggest thing, I think, in rigging. You have to realize that you have miners who are moving hundreds of pounds of equipment above the heads of other miners who are not wearing hard hats. And I don't know of any construction site that would actually allow that to happen. So it's really important to have calling protocol, train your students, annually train your students like I spoke before. I really recommend that if you do have a fly system, that you do not allow your students to re-weight by themselves. There needs to be a competent adult in charge. And by competent, the definition of competent is that the adult knows what they're doing and they've been trained on the proper procedures. So rigging is probably one of the most dangerous aspects of a theater that has a fly system. So again, protocol training and documentation of all that is very, very important.
And I loved your... Mm-hmm. Go ahead, George, sorry.
Sorry. There is a lot of information out there on rigging. A lot of the old stagecraft, so to speak, books cover rigging. Nowadays, there's also a very, very well-known company out there by the name of J.R. Clancy out of Syracuse, New York, which has been in the rigging business since the 1800s. And they have a fantastic website with all kinds of safety materials, instructions on how to do this, that, and whatever. It's really a fantastic resource for learning rigging. And again, there's consultants you can get from outside companies, including J.R. Clancy, to come over and teach your people how to use the system safely and properly. You can get usually get a lot more mileage out of a rigging system than a lot of people realize.
Sure, maybe even contact the manufacturer of your rigging system and see if they would come do a safety day with your students.
There's lots of information out there.
And this is where it becomes really important to circle back to Beth's point about making sure your students are, that you've certified that they are trained and they're recertified every year, that they're trained again to make sure their skills haven't slipped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because rigging is something you can't always be supervising them. If you're running a show, you can't be backstage and in the scene shop and everywhere while the actual sets are flying in and out during a show. So they need to know the correct protocol. They need to be rehearsed. You don't want an actor stepping over a doorway or something while something's flying in. Everything needs to be rehearsed and the students need to be responsible. And I have seen students pulled off of rigging because they are not responsible enough. And that's something that you need to make that call because it really is dangerous.
Can you speak to the importance of a rehearsal for the technicians, and do you hold Q2Q rehearsals?
Yep.
Somebody want to take that question?
Sorry, who'd you say?
I said, does someone, Beth? Okay. Go right ahead.
Definitely really important to run, especially as George will probably attest to having a set change rehearsal where there's no actors on stage, and the crew goes through all of their set changes. And again, like I just said, rigging, you need to make sure that things are flying out when they're supposed to. Sometimes the student can't see what they're doing because there's legs in the way or scenery in the way. So they need to rely on the stage manager to be calling the cues for them or someone else spotting for them. So all this really, really needs to be rehearsed. And it's really important also for lighting, for light cues, having a Q2Q for lighting as well. And some costume changes too, that they need to be rehearsed.
And sound as well, sound cues as well.
Definitely. When the sound effects happen, they need to happen at the same time. There's no point in a character pushing the doorbell and then 2 seconds later the doorbell rings.
So it sounds like that you're saying we need to build time in our rehearsal schedule for this Q2Q without the actors, that our technical kids need just as much rehearsal as our actors. Well, not just as much, but need rehearsal time set aside for them just like our actors.
And it's important to realize that the actors know the show by then, and the technical kids have just come in 2 days ago, and they don't know the show. So while the actors are more and more comfortable with it, the technical crew needs that little bit of extra time for themselves.
Would you have any suggestions for helping your tech crew learn the show? And maybe George, can you speak to that as a designer? When you were asked to design a show, were there any rehearsals that you were invited to?
Oh yeah, like Beth said, if there's a scene change, I'm expected to be there because the set was my idea anyway, so it's supposed to help figure out how to move it around. That's something we did in school all the time. We were expected to be there to make things happen. But what I was going to say, Corey, is that the idea of doing these rehearsals and setting up the processes and the checks and so forth goes back to your second question in the seminar: how do I prepare my students for the professional theater world? All that is done in the professional theater world. A Q2Qs, set rehearsals, sound rehearsals, light rehearsals, it's all done in the professional world. So one way to get the students ready for that is to begin training them about all of this while they're in school.
Excellent point. Thank you. I want to thank so much this evening, Beth and George. You've been fabulous contributors to our community. We picked you because your voices have been so supportive of our teachers here online. Thank you so much for being here. Is there any last minute thing you'd like to say to our audience this evening?
Thank you for listening, and I hope that this has been helpful.
Thank you for asking questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great questions. Thank you, everyone. So with that, we're going to say goodnight for the evening. Join us again. Please watch for upcoming webinars like this one. There will be another one next week, and all throughout April and May into June, we'll be holding these conversations about all of the tech issues that you have been writing in to ask about. So thank you, Beth. Thank you, George. And good night, everyone. Thanks for attending.
Good night.
Thank you.
The preceding podcast was recorded from a live event as a part of the Educational Theater Association's professional development programming. The views and opinions expressed were those of our guest speakers and were not intended to reflect endorsement of an organization, vendor, or product by EDTA.